Welcome, everyone, to our Thursday night Stargate Roundtable. We're happy to have you join us, and we have a good program planned for this evening. We have a guest the second hour, an author, Nancy Rines, Awakening from the Light, and we know that you'll enjoy that, as well as all of our regulars who are on board here tonight. So, Angel Sue, I pass the talking stick to you and let you set the tone and get us started.
Thank you, Marita Robert. And welcome, welcome, in the light of the most radiant one, and in the office of the Christ, and only in the office of the Christ. And we're invoking the loving energies of Saint Germain and the Violet Flame to be with us here now with Stargate Roundtable. So as you're settling into your heart space, declaring yourself as the beloved child that you are, welcome in your support team, your higher self and your twin flame, your guides, your masters, your teachers, your angels, your councils of light, and all those from the lighted realms that celebrate you being here, breathing with intent, being one who calls in unconditional divine love to fill you up with every breath that you take, and sharing gratitude with every breath that you take. So intend that is happening now. Being filled with beautiful, unconditional divine love. Let your heart expand. And let gratitude fill you up as well, and share that without any limitation. That gratitude flowing from you out to every bit of the planet. And as you allow this to go on autopilot, look on the inside. See where things are spinning perfectly. See where things are challenged. And intend that whatever can be released happen effortlessly. Yes, let's let this whole body, physically, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually, go into the perfect, original, divine blueprint now that you designed to celebrate this lifetime with. Calling in now all aspects of your divine self, ever young, ever beautiful, ever perfect, and let that just flow to your toes, out through your hair. Everywhere, everywhere, celebrating that beautiful, wonderful being that you are as the child of God, Goddess, the God of your heart, all there is. So let this be lifted up too by the ministering angels, by the avatars, by the spirit doctors, ever being brought into higher physical manifestation of beauty, of health, of harmony. Whatever concerns that you have, whatever challenges, will be brought into the highest aspect of love. So would phrase respect, thanks, and even more love. Let us pull that peace breath in. And on the exhalation, remember when you have felt the most wonderful that you have ever felt. And on the exhalation, say the word peace and play that memory. Peace. Let that wonderful feeling anchor in and magnify into higher, higher wonderment, at-one-ment, and joy. Choose that now, peace. Then we're going on to all the beings that we claim, our family, our friends, those that we feel a closeness with, those that we don't really jive with, those that we think are downright people to avoid. We're going to celebrate all beings, any issue that you're aware of, anything that is going on, even with Mother Earth and all the kingdoms here, all the dimensions. And we're going to praise, respect, thank, and love each one with that unconditional neutrality. They hold an important part of the divine plan as well as we do. So with this true understanding, this acceptance, and allowing ourselves to cherish all, we're going to slip into the law of one now, the original law of creation, and simply say we are all one. And when one is harmed, then all are harmed. As one is helped, then all are helped. And therefore, in the name of who we are, and we are one with all there is, we ask that only the highest good happen here. For every person, for every being, for every place, for every condition, situation, all of it, to bring forth the highest happiness, especially for Nasara, the Reformation Act, our Faction 3 White Knights, and the Galactic Forces of Light, and all those that hold this vision. Bringing our planet into the highest happiness, highest harmony, freedom and peace and sovereignty, all the very best blessings, and those that we don't even begin to understand how to dream, amazing, magical, mystical, miraculous things happening every moment. So with this, we are asking for the highest good to happen here under the law of one for all concerned, throughout all time and space as well. We say peace, and we give gratitude that this is done. And so it is. And we're going to close now by saying all men, all women, all children, all beings, all creation, we are all one. And we celebrate. And with this, Marita Robert, I pass the talking stick.
Well, thank you, Angel Sue, for getting us started this evening. And we have a little a different opening because our beloved Carolyn Rainbird is not going to be with us this evening. She's fine. She just has a lot of people in at her center there, and so is not going to be with us this evening for a while here. And we have not reached Annie Rose, so we're going to pass the talking stick to Tara and Rama. And Rama, tell us who you've talked to out there today. Well, what's the latest word?
Oh, gosh, I just can hear the beautiful music that she's playing at her concert, Mr. Rainbird. But, oh, my goodness. Well, Benjamin Fulford put a wild one out today. We're going to leave any comments, but it's interesting. There's this idea that the Boeing 777 part of the wing, you know, the flap part of the wing, that was just a front so that our lovely little Benjamin Netanyahu could plan to nuke Iran on all these different places where this is what this thing says. Mm-hmm. I'm just looking. Is Kathy here?
No, she'll be with us just in a little while, but she's not here at the moment.
Oh, okay. Everybody's on to something. Okay.
Right.
So the sudden appearance of that Malaysian Airlines, they're also conflagrated.
There she is. Kathy's here now.
Oh, there he's trying to call her. That's right. Okay, but conflagrating the idea that Flight 370, the Malaysian Air Flight 370 and Flight 17 was the same flight. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's not true either. I do want to say that Netanyahu owns the Malaysian airline planes, that Israel, i.e. Netanyahu at the moment, owns the planes, which puts you into the place of where the psychology is, which they say here, is that everything that we've been looking at has been a ploy to get into some kind of a war somewhere,
right,
which is what these Republican Nazi collaborators want.
Yes.
And they all still want war. It is just astounding to me what all of these Republicans, they didn't start it yet. It starts in about 45 minutes. But it's interesting because tonight Jon Stewart is his final night and Rachel is just making us laugh. She's playing all these old clips of Jon Stewart and she introduces him as the best comedian on politics and everything else you want to know about in the world in terms of finding out through comedy what the truth is. Like, he's the best we've ever had, and that's the truth. That is the truth. And it's just interesting that this dog and pony show that we call the Republican debate today is happening on the same night. But that being said, also last night, Rachel covered this case, and Rama's got plenty to say. I wanted to say that Rachel covered this case, which has to do with Rand Paul's super PAC. It's called she called it the Eagle Eating Fish Land Paul Super PAC. Mm. And anyway, there are three members inadvertently somehow of his extended family, physical family, as well as in his campaign that have been indicted for bribery. Well, Ron Paul is involved because he participated in bribing Rand Paul's Rand Paul's campaign manager. I mean, it's so convoluted. His name is Jesse Benton. And Jesse Benton he's in trouble because he quit Michelle Bachmann in the last elections. And that Michelle Bachmann, right on television at the time when it happened, exposed that this guy Jesse literally, to the world, literally committed campaign bribery with Ron Paul at the time. And he actually quit her campaign management position and got $70,000+ to go join Ron Paul's campaign management. And Ron Paul paid him the $70,000 to do that.
Yeah.
And the reason the connection's so powerful, if you remember, they actually said that Ron Paul actually won one of the primaries, the primaries, after three recounts in Iowa, which is very important, right? Isn't that where they do all this?
Yeah, the Iowa caucuses.
Yeah, they consider that determines who's going to become president. And evidently this guy who's married to Ron Paul's granddaughter, and they have three girls too, and so they're all in the family. This is scary stuff. And then there's one more guy, and he's connected too. He was the head of the super PAC, Kent somebody. I'm not seeing it right in front. Yet what we're seeing unfold, you know, one story and the other. Oh, goody. It looks like...
have a caller here if you would want to let Chandra Das ask his question.
Oh, sure. Go ahead.
Chandra Das, hello there.
Greetings.
Howdy, Krishna.
All right.
Howdy, Bull.
Hey, listen, there's a huge 8-8 meditation, a group meditation, a worldwide meditation with Sri Sri Ravi Shankar for the Guinness Book of World Records. So if everybody would grab a pencil and write down this website, planetmeditates.org, and you just log in and sign up. It's a huge wave of meditators that are going to meditate all at the same time. It's going to be live with a webcast with Sri Sri Ravi Shankar. He'll be in St. Petersburg, Russia, is where he'll be live. And then it can be webcast all over the world. So it's in one day, 12 hours.
What time is that going to be? Saturday?
It'll be August 8th at 2 p.m. Greenwich Mean Time, which is one day, 12 hours, 37 minutes, and 1 second from now. 1 day, 12 hours, 36 minutes, and 55 seconds. So it just depends on now. They got this thing. If you go to planetmeditates.org, it'll have this huge thing. It'll show you, how long it'll be until we all meditate. And then you sign up, and then the webcast, you can hook up with the webcast. So you can see Sri Sri Ravi Shankar. He'll guide everybody with a meditation at that specific time. So I just wanted to pass that along. Yeah,
okay,
I don't know how to convert that, the hours, but it's at 2 p.m. Greenwich Mean Time.
If that's from now, meaning Eastern Time, or from which time zone?
2 p.m. Greenwich Mean Time. So if I'm in Central Time, but
just go to the world.
As long as you go,
it'll tell you.
Yeah, once you go to the planetmeditates.org, it'll make sense to you because it'll tell you how many days, because everybody's time zones differ, obviously. But
right, okay.
So I just wanted to pass that along and hope that we can do some really good with that that group consciousness.
Yes,
Yeah, and I have another gift in mind for Rama and Tara. I don't know if you've ever heard of a Shakti mat or a modern day bed of nails. Have you ever heard of those things?
Yes, I have.
They're really awesome. Do you have used any of those at all, or would you like some? I can get a couple of them to you, sent to you. I'd love to do that.
What are they? I don't know what they are.
I would love it. I just haven't been able to get it.
Okay, yeah. I'll send you a couple of them so that you and Tara, I can see you, like, when you go out to do your mission, when you call, after you call in the ships, or you lay down on the on this mat, and it's like laying on a bed of nails, and then you go from discomfort to comfort to samadhi. It's so, and it works every time. It's just really nice.
It's
and it starts kicking out oxytocin, because it's the happiness, you know, that's what your body does, because it reacts to the quote-unquote pain of it. You'd have to kind of make a commitment to go through the pain of laying on the bed of nails. But it's not really pain. It's more like discomfort. And then all of a sudden your body starts kicking out all these endorphins, and the oxytocin comes in, and then it lowers your blood pressure.
So is it going to make us giggle? When we get done, are we going to feel like giggling? Is this the idea?
You will feel in that deep delta state, the samadhi. It's like, samadhi. But it's also going to make you feel like you want to go F a tree. It makes you like feel really alive.
That's good.
I love it.
That's good.
Yeah, it just like brings the shakti energy up, especially if you lay on your front side. That's where your hara is, you know. If you lay on your front, it's like very intense. So there's all kinds of websites that show, but it's really cool. I think I was thinking about Ram and his health issues, so that might help too, along with that I said before.
Thank you, Chandra Das.
Thank you.
You know what you're doing. Yeah. You're listening. You're feeling the uplift of the energies, and the abundance is coming in so many ways, and I am so blessed to be knowing you, and so is Rama, and so are we all. And thank you for having your heart so open and so willing to do what can help.
Okay, one other thing I want to mention to you is turmeric is one of the most powerful antioxidant. I don't know if you put that in your diet. I have this excellent recipe for khichdi, which is like rice and dal, and I wanted to send like 20 pounds of basmati rice and some mung beans and a recipe for this khichdi that I make, because I work with Willie and Judy now again at the kitchen.
Okay.
So Amazon you some khichdi, some rice and dal, and some if you're vegan, you'll probably want to use coconut oil rather than ghee to pop your mustard seeds in.
Yeah, that would be great. And, you know, it's really great to – please give our hugs and stuff to Willie and – huh?
Judy,
right. Yes, I hope they're all doing well. Chandra Das?
They'll never forget the – yes.
Okay, we
you're
just missed
well.
You from – you weren't talking for a minute, and I thought we lost you. That's all.
No, I'm here.
We thank you for calling in and for sharing your time, your energy, and your information, and we'll see if we can be part of the record of the meditators on Saturday.
Yes, let's make the record, the Guinness World Record. Sri Sri Ravi Shankar has the record for the most, like, sitars. He gets like 1,000 sitars together and has these huge concerts everywhere in the world, so... And he gets like bagpipes together, you know, just anything to bring awareness to the uplifting of the cultural wave. He tries to, you know, bring such integrity to everybody's different cultures, and it's awesome. So launch the wave, join the global movement to meditate all together in 1 day, 12 hours, 30 minutes, and 57 seconds.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you. Namaste.
All right. Namaste. See you next time.
Thank you, Chandra Das. Thank you. Okay. Rama.
In the last few days, let's just say the Gestapo here in the city of Holy Faith, or getting a little intense, as, you know, the issues going on across the planet are increasing with the WaveX. The frequencies are uplifting in so many magnificent ways, and, you know, the rabid dogs of the old order, you know, I call them the Gestapo because they don't really protect and serve the people anymore. They protect and serve the UN. And let's just say it is, you know, getting very intense. And I took a little ride today up towards Taos Mountain, and I got to talk to Dodi and Di, and they shared with me this story that Michael Salia put out on ExoPolitics that is, I put it on Twitter and on our website, and maybe you can read what.
Oh, yes. Okay, I can do that.
Yeah.
So Dodi and Di called Rama up. Rama got this intuition to drive up toward the Sikh people.
Yeah.
And then he you know, and anything but Santa Fe at this time. I mean, he's got to be 20 miles away anyway. But, I mean, Santa Fe, I don't know about the bigger cities around where anybody else lives, but they are crawling with the cops, and we've got that
Jade Helm
running around in the state.
We got the SUV. We got these brand new SUVs with military personnel that are dressed like the soldiers in Iraq. And
yeah,
they have no
Tell your story about what happened to you when you were down there.
I was taking pictures downtown in Santa Fe.
Well, he went to look to take a picture of a bus because the bus depot is downtown in Santa Fe. So he went down there, but he didn't see the bus.
No.
And so he had, you know, he had a park pretty far away. But
and I had to walk over to
Since he couldn't take a picture of the bus sign, there's a sign on the bus that he wants to take a picture of.
Right.
He started taking pictures of the beautiful trees by the post office and stuff like that.
Yeah,
and he was
just so green.
Yeah, and all of a sudden, one of these unmarked
one of these guys dressed like our soldiers in Iraq jumped out of this vehicle, you know, and he had an M16 in his hands. I mean, this is how these guys, you know, go about doing their business. And he just said, "Let me see some ID." And I just said, what for? What did I do? You know, what law did I break? He goes, let me see some ID. And he started to get louder. And I said, what law did I break taking pictures? And then he said, let me see some effing ID now. And I said, okay, here. And he looked at it. And, you know, he was, you know, just looking at it. Then he, you know, said, let me see your phone. And so rather than get into an altercation, I handed him my phone. And he looked at the pictures, and he looked at me, looked at the ID, handed it back. And I said, what's up, sir? And he just said, we're just being very aware of people taking pictures of buildings
and bridges buses
and various areas, because since 9/11 we got folks that want to target certain areas and
blah 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 they've been trained, you know,
right? And this goes into the realm of Homeland Security, where, you know, the great lie out there put out by the rabid dog Republicrats that ISIL is going to come up through Mexico and do something.
Yes, and since we're one of the border states, we get the joy of experience here. So anyway, but let's switch gears now.
Yes.
Dodi and Di, the reason that you were looking down there is because the other day, was that Monday or Tuesday?
That was Monday.
Monday, Rama was on Cirios, and he was Sarrios, and he was just, you know, in traffic, and it was going really slow, and one of our big buses had this huge sign. I don't know if you all remember Dove of Oneness, but down by D.C., there were all these Nasara signs on buses. Well,
right.
This had a huge sign, but this one said it was the best. It was such a combination of messages, but it said, momentito, I'll get the right page. Well, it said, do you remember, Rama?
It said, demand justice for Sandra Bland.
Black Lives Matter. Get the Reformation Act enacted now, in huge letters across the whole side of the bus.
Just, I mean,
on a big bus.
The background was white. You know, the background was white. The letters were bold and just in black.
Okay, well, in black, they should.
Yeah,
blue,
and
blue.
I tried to find out. You know, I went and asked the bus driver, you know, who paid for the sign. And he just, you know,
he just said it was anonymous, right?
Yeah, he said it was an anonymous donor. I can't really talk about it. So Tom the Cat, you know, through, you know, me playing with the instant message thing on my phone, I was able to find out our fellow white knight, Anonymous 7.5, who happens to be a New Mexico State Police trooper, paid for this sign. And, I mean, this is very awesome stuff because it's we, the people, moving it forward.
Yes. And what an appropriate thing to happen. So didn't you say to Tom to tell Anonymous that, or to pass the word around, that you could get some signs up in other cities?
Yeah, and I tried to go to, that's why I went downtown here to take a picture of the bus and put it up on the website, but obviously someone's going to have to take a picture of it because they are watching folks like hawks here now.
Mm-hmm. So the other part of the story, where have I lost? I just lost my page. No, turn it around. That's right. It's on this side. Okay. So Dodi and Di called Rama up, and they were still in Wesak Valley. Remember, they told us that we're going to be here till 8:08, which is this Saturday.
Right.
And I guess that's a special day for you too, Marita Robert. Anyway, Ram asked, what's up? They said they are still in Wesak Valley, with refugees from India, Nepal, and Tibet, about 100 people, most of them all speak English as well as their native tongue. And they say, then they went on and they said, pay no attention to the bloviating blowhard named Donald Duck with the hair.
Right.
What Trump is doing is trying to drum up support to get back on TV after getting kicked off.
Yep. NBC.
Yeah, on NBC, after getting kicked off of NBC for insulting the Mexican American people. Remember, they're Americans too. They're just Mexican Americans. Even though Trump is running for president, denouncing a whole society of people has karma. Send him love. In other words, karma's pretty instant right now, so
yeah,
he's going to need some love here to handle whatever that brings. Michael Salia's article, Sleeping Giants in Stasis Chambers, Ready to Awaken Whistleblower Claims. This article is the true headline news. Some of these giants awakening from stasis are from the Antares Arcturus Midway Station. They work directly with Lord Metatron and his beloved Nephtha-El-Ra, as warriors of the heart. They are here as part of the ground crew with Lady Master Athena and the Ashtar Command, as well as a gaggle of warrior Pashats and Blue Avians. But Pashats are, of course, Mother's people. What's happening is they are awakening from stasis, which in our time-space continuum began right before the right before the rise of Atlantis. As they awaken now, in their time-space continuum, they may have taken a short half-hour short half-hour cat nap. They said, right now, there are very high sheikhs in mystical Islam, in the Sufi order, also priests, scientists.
This is in Iran.
Well, you say here it's not only in Iran.
Right.
But that's the beginning of it. Yes. That's,
yes.
The Iranians.
Because in the article, Michael Salia speaks about these stasis chambers that these Iranian scientists have found. And, you know, this is another piece of the story of why these Republicrats, you know, want to go to war with Iran, because they do not want this news to come out that the good guys are coming. I mean, they're already here. And it has to do with all the contingency forces that are already in place, as, you know, Wave X.
Yeah. And it's just like when Benjamin Fulford was saying that the military in Israel are putting put on notice to contain Netanyahu from doing what he's trying to do.
Right.
Trying to nuke Iran without giving any. He already warned everybody a couple of years ago that he's going to be on his own clock and he'll do what he wants to do when he wants to do. So
yeah.
Everybody knows. Anyway, the point we're making here is that Faction 3 and all of the Ashtar Command are part of that, as part of our military, are on it, along with the sovereign militia forces. And anyway, these Islamic mystical sheikhs and priests and scientists of the Sufi order are equivalent to Dr. Crusher and her Starfleet medical team, who are monitoring this wake-up process. These beings are not just in Iran. They have been assigned to power portals in the mountains, in the deserts, in the mounds, such as Poverty Point, Serpent Mound, also Judicial Rock, many, many, many sacred way stations where the energies are very high, Mount Ida, Mount Magazine, as Wave X, along with the energies of the supermoon, that's at the end of August, and the blood moon, which is at the end of September, 28th of September, these beings and their frequencies coming in have been part of the divine plan on Earth at this time. The fail-safe mechanisms to provide the rainbow bridge to freedom's holy flame as we choose to fully move into the age of enlightenment. Remember, the freedom of choice is there. Please do not get caught up in the Roman gladiator hunger games of the 13 families.
Yes.
And walk in beauty, be peace, be love, teach only love. What else did they say? Is there anything else?
They just said the energies are getting more and more intense by each day.
But then these matching energies help us to walk through. This is a changeover that's, you know, the hardest fought changeover by those in resistance to love.
You this is why, you know, it's imperative we meditate every day. And I thank you so much for, you know, telling us about this meditation, Chandra Das, because this...
Well, hopefully, as you look it up, it might be something we can air.
That's right.
I know we aired one of his... He got all these children, a million children, in Thailand, and they were around this Buddha temple in a circle. A million children.
Yes.
And they were all singing. I think it was just Om, but it was just... Oh my goodness. We aired that.
Yes.
We were at Gurumeet's house in that time.
Yeah.
Okay, so what else, Rama?
What else? I can say that the global financial situation is continuing to deteriorate around the planet. There was a bankster that was put in jail for 14 years. I mean, that's too little too late. Jamie Dimon needs to join Mr. Bernie Madoff along with Mr. Lloyd Blankfein and all the others.
Lloyd Blankfein's not in jail.
No, I'm saying.
No, but who's the one that you got that got 14
I can't
years?
Remember the guy's name, but he was charged with major fraud and he got 14 years. That's what I heard. Sam Cedar talked about that today. I don't remember the guy's name. I gotta look. And
I just want to say that the last of the comments on racial going through the machinations of Rand Paul's troublesome campaign bunch that are in the bribing, you know, game here in Ohio or Iowa, excuse me. She said, "What I am truly interested in is." Are they still bribing people in Iowa? And this guy is a big honcho, this, forgetting his name, that guy that I just mentioned. Jesse, he's a big honcho in Iowa. Yes, there's bribes going on everywhere. And Iowa isn't got any tab on it except that they still have this idea that Iowa can determine who will be president or not, you see. And she just said it's interesting that Michelle Bachmann was literally right in the very beginning about this bribery going on behind the scenes. And she said everybody's on the take in Iowa. Are bribes still being paid for endorsements in Iowa? Can that be part of this investigation? Yes, it can. Yes, it can.
Yes. And everything that is going on is a major distraction right now. I mean,
there is another case that was back in a long time ago, but it's former President Carlos Menem in Argentina is standing trial for his alleged involvement in the cover-up of his country's worst ever terrorist attack. The 85-year-old and 12 other defendants are accused of derailing an investigation into the 1994 bombing of a whole Jewish community center in Buenos Aires. 85 people were killed in the blast. As convicted, he faces 15 years in prison. They're just rounding them up everywhere, everywhere. So that's just what we're observing. But Lady Di and Dodi did say to, you know, go see a good light movie.
A spiritual uplifting movie,
or come to the meditation. We'll see. Maybe we can do that on Saturday. But
everything that is happening right now is we are in that. Such a narrow moment as the frequencies that are literally just streaming in from galactic center and all points. It is uplifting the planet, the neighboring planets, and overall, I'm talking to folks out there that are experiencing this, they're having more and lighter moments of so much joy coming into their lives. And at the same time, the disparity is so blatant where things are getting crystallized and kind of polarized, so to speak, that as, you know, you have the eyes to see and the ears to hear. You can see how blatant
Yes.
That these folks, these 10 rabid dogs that are trying to make their point, they hold not a candle to Bernie Sanders.
No, they don't.
Bernie is...
Bernie made a comment today, and he said, what you're watching is all these characters are saying what they want to get their name counted for, but they have no interest in people, the working people of this country.
No, all
no
it
interest
is
at all.
All it is about greed. Number one issue.
And then there was an $8.5 billion project in Egypt, and it was the money came from the United States, and they owe it back. $18.5 billion project. And they opened it today, and they expanded the Suez Canal.
A new lane in the Suez Canal, and Mr.
A 35-kilometer long new expansion lane. Yet they widened all the old stuff too, because they could only have a single one way each.
Right.
And then so they have a double lane. But that, in addition to that, they have a new 35-kilometer also lane. But the they widened everything because the wider ships couldn't get through at all. So that's just something that's happened. And then there's this the survivors of Wednesday's capsized boat in Libya on the coast brought to safety more than 370 migrants who were on board the boat. And there's at least 200 others that are still missing. So.
And President Obama had a live town hall meeting with John Lewis today about the 50 years ago today and the Voting
Rights Act.
And it is just so imperative that people, you know, have the right to vote. That, you know, it is just, I mean, I can't imagine that, you know.
Well, this is going to get handled now.
Yeah. Yes.
This piece.
It's probably already up.
John Lewis, yeah, he said, every year I head back to the birthplace of a new America, Selma, Alabama, where a determined struggle for voting rights transformed our democracy 50 years ago. On March 7th, 1965, Hosea Williams and I led a band of silent witnesses, 600 nonviolent crusaders, intending to march 50 miles to Montgomery, Alabama's capital, to demonstrate the need for voting rights in America. At the foot of the bridge, we were met by Alabama state troopers who trampled peaceful protesters with horses and shot tear gas into the crowd. Mm-hmm. I was hit on the head with a nightstick and suffered a concussion on the bridge. I thought that was going to be my last demonstration. I thought I might die that day. We knew the dangers that lie ahead, yet we marched away anyway, hoping to usher in a more fair society, a place where every American would be able to freely exercise their constitutional right to vote, and each of us would have an equal voice in the democratic process. We knew that standing up for our rights would be a death warrant, yet we felt it would be better to die than to live with injustice. As President Lyndon Johnson signed the Voting Rights Act into law, it was a great day. The act made the ballot box immediately more accessible to millions of Americans, every race, gender, religion, region, economic status, and national origin. It had been called the most effective legislation of the last 50 years. Yet just 2 years ago, the Supreme Court struck a blow at the heart of the Voting Rights Act, nullifying a key provision that had curbed discriminatory voting rules and statutes from becoming law. As soon as the court's decision was announced, states began implementing restrictive voting laws. While some states are changing laws to increase the number of Americans who are able to participate in our democracy by increasing early voting days and making it easier for people to cast a ballot, far too many states, mostly red states, are passing new laws that make it much harder and more difficult to vote. Every voting and voter registration drives have been restricted same-day voting has been eliminated in some cases. Strict photo ID laws have been adopted, and improper of the voting rolls are negating access to thousands, perhaps millions, who have voted for decades. Yes, in the 2012 election, Greg Palast said they successfully negated 10 million votes. And that, and even at that, Barack had a majority, a very substantial majority.
Well,
that's why people are still...
We have big wills whenever you can take a breath.
Okay, let me just a couple more paragraphs. Let me finish this sentence. That's why people are still marching for this cause today. Even as we speak, the NAACP is leading a 40-day, 40-night march from Selma, Alabama to Washington, D.C. in support of a number of issues, including the issue of voting rights. As citizens, it is our duty to make sure that our political process remains open to every eligible voter and that every citizen can freely participate in the democratic process. And as it comes time to get out and vote, we have to do so. The right to vote is the most powerful, non-violent, transformative tool that we have in a democracy. And the least we can do is to take full advantage of the opportunity to make our voices heard. And I just wanted to say that, with Nasara coming here, I was just remembering that Michael Brown's mother has been in the news, too, because they had a special 2-day interview with her on Al Jazeera. And, I mean, she was still, the tears are just rolling down her face. But she says this has got to change, not stopped. What they did to Michael, they're just doing it multiples of times. And the history, as we're uncovering it, is just enormous, which we didn't know about, in real time. And, So, the King of Swords was very blatantly and bluntly honest about this, and that there's only one penalty for this kind of out-and-out impunity, and it's called death, the death penalty. And with that, that whole thing goes away, and then we start over again. So, I mean, these are issues that are huge. So, Big Will, how can I help you today? How can we help you today? Big Will?
You still there?
Yes, can you hear me?
Big,
we can.
Now we can. Yes. Now we can.
Okay, very good. Okay, very good report. And Lady Master Tara, I know that we're going to talk about the Vigilance Fulford report because, yes, indeed, it is interesting, and I hope that you bring that up. Now, I do want to say this. The largest pyramid has been found in the Atlantic Ocean. They're saying that there's a very strong possibility when the earth changes does happen, this pyramid is going to arise. What do you know about that, Lord Rama and Lady Master Tara?
Is it the one in the Caribbean?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, we talked about that. That's years ago when they really found it. It's about 3 or 4 years ago, but they're just bringing it to the public now, which is okay. But it's part of a grid of 14 power spots of the Atlantean grid.
Yes.
And the 14th one is the Indian Head on the border, south central border of Alberta and Manitoba, I think. Is that the next one over? Alberta and Saskatchewan, I think. And it's in the Copper Mountains. And it's literally the Indian Head with all the feathers, and it's all copper. And so that's speaking to something. But that's the grid that Dr. Keshi can use to completely take the whole world off of every bill that you could think of for any kind of energy.
Free energy forever.
Totally free energy forever. So it's just another part of the piece of, you know, getting people to wake up that there's something more going on here than meets the eye. That's what I can say about that.
Okay, very, very good. When these characters, Congress, I understand that they're on summer vacation, I believe it is. When they come back, what do you think that's going to happen to these characters when they return to Washington, D.C., Lord Rama?
I would just say that...
Yo no sé.
At this moment, as we are watching the increased frequencies and magnitudes, the energies pouring in, their pants are around their ankles, and it's blatant as all get out for people to see. And I would just say, focus on Bernie Sanders. That is the answer. Everything else is a distraction.
Yes, because the people need an education. They need an education big time.
Yeah, we need to go to ground zero and start over. Speaking of ground zero, 9/11. I mean, it is still front and center, and that is the issue of the day. And I believe this could be the September where we see justice. I cannot say. I just am saying.
And just to back up a little bit, because Greg Palast was on the Sam Cedar show on Monday.
Right.
And he said people from Palestine, Pakistan, Afghanistan are coming forward to say right after 9/11, they were being rounded up and tortured in black op sites all over Europe and Egypt. And some of these places, in particular one in the Ukraine, they were putting these people in 3x3 foot boxes and filling the whole box up with water to the top. And everyone died because they kept them in there for 3 days, except for one. And Chandra Das, this is very good news because you live right around Fairfield. Anyway, this one person, as a practicing TMer, transcendental meditator, who put himself in an altered state for 3 days. The angels came and cradled me in their arms, he said. And the black ops at the site, they took him out, and he said, I have evidence against Osama bin Laden, and I would like to speak to my lawyer. Apparently, he got to speak with his lawyer. And the Bin Laden, this is Greg Palast telling this on radio with the Sam Cedar Majority Report. I'm just
right.
Passing this back on to everybody. Apparently, he got to speak with his lawyer, and the Bin Laden story using the Bin Laden story as an excuse got him to speak with his lawyer. His lawyer told the United States Black Site Ops his client had a kidney in failure and he needed an operation. That's all true. So they sent this man to a hospital in London, and he got to speak to representatives from our U.S. State Department. He was blessed with one of the representatives from the State Department who being an aware person who knew about my 9/11 being an inside job. This representative took the Afghan man's first-hand account of what he experienced at the Ukrainian black ops site. He said before he was put in the box with water for 3 days, he was chained to shackles embedded in a wall for 2 months, and every day the ops threw ice water on him to keep him awake, and he was fed, and there was one small circle of light coming from the ceiling, which was a couple of stories up above. The Afghani man was a well-to-do, upper-middle-class import-export trader in gold and silver and tribal hand-woven Afghani rugs. He also exported hashish and marijuana. He did not deal with heroin. He was very influential with governments and warlords of several Afghani provinces. As a result of being this well known, he was able to bargain more easily for his life. They also waterboarded him and then placed him in the box of water for 3 days. Because of his wealth and his status, he was able to travel between the UK and the United States and his country over the years. In his travels, he connected with Maharishi Mahesh Yogi and learned TM and became very advanced in the practice. After he told his story to this awake United States representative, then he asked to speak to Greg Last, as he felt that Greg could do the best job getting this story out into the media. Greg got his gentleman, a very good activist barrister in London, he said. And the gentleman told his story to the barrister, and the barrister, with Greg's expertise and access to documents, secret documents as well, put together a major criminal lawsuit against Donald Rumsfeld, Dick Cheney, Bush Jr., Tony Blair, Gordon Brown, and many, many others of the Bush-Clinton crime family and across the pond, too. Greg said that this barrister has entered the case in the London High Court as well as the Ninth Circuit Court in D.C., and the charges include violations of the Geneva Conventions. Greg said, I am, and we all are, going to finally see the Bush-Clinton crime family brought up very shortly on charges of war crimes, crimes against humanity, and high treason. With those kinds of charges, again, the only verdict is the death penalty. Greg said this case is one of hundreds of thousands of cases that are equal to or worse than this story, and have been tried in 4 major war crimes tribunals across the world over the past 12 years and counting. By ending this story and starting anew, we can create a world reformation based in peace and love. And that's the end of the story. These are such fantastic stories. Every single one of them, you can see how they're dovetailing to getting Nasara into our hands, everyone. I pass the talking stick. I think we're... Do we have our guest?
Yes, she's been here for about 10 minutes, so we're just waiting till you took a breath. Okay. Well, we do have our guest, and I want to mention that if you wish to call in and ask a question, 888-429-5471, and that's the whole United States and Canada, it's toll free. 888-429-5471. So that's so you can communicate with our guest as she is here. Nancy, can you hear me?
I can. I'm here.
Okay. Nancy Rines is an author who has recently published the book Awakenings from the Light and is going to share a little bit about her near-death experiences. And I'm going to let you tell a little bit about what you'd like to, and then I'll ask you some questions. But what would you like to share about the experience and the importance of it in your life?
Okay, this experience happened about 18 months ago or so. It was in January of 2014. And before that time, I considered myself an agnostic or an atheist. I kind of vacillated between the two. But in early January of 2014, I went out on a bike ride. And here in Colorado, January can be a beautiful, beautiful time for weather. It was in the mid-60s by about 10 in the morning. So I went out on a bike ride in town here, and I live in a little town outside of Boulder, Colorado, and just didn't think anything of it. I used to do this quite a bit. I just rode around town doing my errands. So this day I happened to run afoul of someone driving an SUV while she was a little bit distracted with her cell phone. And she didn't notice that I was in this roundabout, and she kind of barreled in without really slowing down and hit me. And while I did try to avoid it, I really couldn't avoid it because of cars behind me. So I ended up in a pretty serious traumatic accident with bicycle versus SUV, which sometimes doesn't turn out so well. And in my case, I'm not going to get into the entire accident story here tonight because it's kind of long and involved, but I ended up in the ER, about a half an hour later, and they found out that I had many, many broken bones. I had at least 24 that they could count, and potentially more. I had a really severe inflammation in my brain and swelling in my brain, concussion. I had, you know, broken collarbone and a cracked pelvis. And but most of the bones that were broken were actually in my back and neck, and very close to being a paraplegic and potentially quadriplegic from all of that. Luckily, I had there was a woman who stopped at the scene and kept me calm and kept me from moving before the paramedics arrived, and she actually saved my back and my ability to walk, because it turns out that one vertebrae in the lower part of my back was completely shattered, and I was scheduled for surgery a couple of days later. So this accident occurred on a Friday, and I actually went into surgery on the following Monday. So I spent a couple of days flat on my back in the ICU waiting to get into surgery. And when surgery came, I've had several surgeries before for other things, most of them fairly minor. And, you know, during those earlier surgeries, I usually just drifted off into kind of a gray state, and then all of a sudden I was waking up in the recovery room and everything was done and I was good to go. This time, instead of going off into that gray state of nothingness, I was immediately transported to a beautiful, beautiful vista, a beautiful place up on a hill, it seemed to me. And I could see all around me this incredible scintillating energy behind everything. And the sky was just vibrating with this beautiful, loving energy. And I could feel this profound, incredible, beautiful sense of love and peace flowing through everything, including me. Not just the landscape, not just the sky, but also me. And there was this warm and loving, it felt like a warm and loving embrace coming back home, and I was welcomed in a very visceral way back home, and it just made me weep in that state that I was in. I felt like, wow, this is right. This is how it should be. I'm back home in this beautiful state of love. And I was in that kind of blissful place up on the hillside looking at everything for, I don't know, it seemed like days to me. And then behind me, off to the side, out of my peripheral vision, I noticed that there was a female figure approaching, and she seemed a little bit different somehow. She was also kind of glowing with this beautiful pearlescent energy. And as she approached me, she had this warm and unbelievable embrace of pure love for me. And she welcomed me back home to where I belong and back into the love. And it was a profound homecoming for me. I just felt like this is the way it should be. We're here to be loved. And she told me that I was there for a specific purpose. And she wanted to share many, many things with me so that I could improve my life on Earth. I was in a place where I wasn't very happy, and I wasn't the best that I could be, and I wanted a change. And she was very, very forthcoming with the things that I needed to do to make those changes in my life. And they were very profound. In fact, many of them were things that we've been taught, you know, from the time we were little kids. The most profound of those really being love. Love is really the center of everything, and we are being, me included, me, she was addressing this to me initially, I'm being asked to love like God loves. So I'm being asked to love not only myself, but also everyone as God loves us all, as the divine loves us. And in that, as much as we can, you know, we're human, we're in this incarnation as humans, we have some limitations, but the effort we make to be loving to other people is very important, and it's very important to me, specifically to reach out and love to as many people as I can in my life. And that was really the core teaching, and she told me, if that's all you get out of this, then you're this will have been worth it meeting my accident. She also went on and talked about many other things that were, you know, in some ways related to that, that the earth itself is a miracle that we have for our use, but it's really not ours. It's God's. It's the divine's, and we're here in part to love it and to have fun and to learn in this place that is God's, that is given to us as a temporary home. She also said that, you know, you are a miracle. Start believing it. God loves you. Why don't you love you? And that was a very profound teaching for me at the time. I really didn't love myself very much, and that was one I took to heart very quickly. It made a big difference in my life to realize firsthand that the divine really does love us beyond our capacity to measure it, beyond our ability to even imagine what that means. And we are here, you know, to try to love each other as best as we can. Even if someone hates us, even if someone doesn't like us, even if we don't like someone, we are being asked to do as it's said in the, you know, in some of our books of wisdom, to reach out and love other people as best as we can. She also taught me about other things, such as we're all connected. We're all connected not only in this ecosystem that we call Earth, but we're also connected spiritually in love, you know, through the divine to the divine, and we're connected to the divine constantly. There's no separation. We may forget that we are connected. We may distance themselves like I had from God, but we truly are connected, and God is waiting for us. If we've walked away from that belief, from whatever our belief is, you know, the divine is waiting for us to kind of take the first step and come back home and start loving each other again. She said some other things, too, that we do have the power in our life to choose our path. We have the power in every moment of every day to choose the darkness or the light, and that's up to us. Whether there's going to be, you know, some kind of retribution in the end if we choose the darkness, I don't know. She didn't get into that, but I can tell you that I'm choosing the light from here on out. It was a pretty incredible place for me to be. And then she also, there were some other things, but I wanted to talk about, she stressed the power of gratitude and of true gratitude. True gratitude really is a state of profound love. It is another way of expressing love to other people. You know, we're grateful for someone helping us out. That's another form of saying, you know what, thank you, I love you for what you did. And again, it's also an expression to the divine of our understanding that we're grateful for this life that we've been given. And I can tell you what, every day that I wake up, I'm grateful for waking up. I'm grateful for being able to put my feet on the ground and stand up and take those first steps every day, because I don't take that for granted anymore. And that's a very profound teaching that she wanted to share with everyone, that extending that gratitude, feeling that gratitude inside, allows that love to flow amongst everyone in our surroundings and from person to person and from us back to the divine presence. So it was a very powerful experience. I don't want to, you know, belabor it too much because it's all written down in other places and I want to give folks a chance to ask questions, but you know, the main part of what she told to me, related to me, was really summed up in the golden rule, love other people as, you know, as you love yourself. Well, probably love other people a little bit more than we love ourselves to start with, and work on loving ourselves as much as God loves us. You know, it's a great place to start. So it's been a huge shift for me to incorporate this into my life. It's been a real turnabout. I've realized when I look out the window every day or go for a walk that love really is around us in a very visceral way. In this reality that we call the physical and in you know, the other that I would call heaven in this book. It's, you know, it's a convenient term. You can use it if you like, but what I was told and shown was that love really forms the structure of both worlds, and the more that we reach out and practice that love, the more we extend compassion and kindness to others, even if it's within our own little circle of friends and family, the more that we lift up that love in the world. And it may seem like it's just a drop in the bucket, but it's a very important drop, and it spreads from person to person the more that we practice it. So reaching out and in compassion and in kindness to others is really important, even if it's, you know, in your mind, just the teller at the grocery store, or, you know, just the bank clerk. You know, we can do it as much as possible and help to raise that vibration of love in the people around us. It's very important, you know, to reach out in love and help. So it's been a very interesting and very soulful 18 months of, you know, returning back to a belief, a faith, right, and love.
What did your medical people, the doctors and those that were around you with that experience, what was their reaction?
Well, at first I was afraid to tell them.
Okay.
You know, I used to work in healthcare for a while, and I guess I got so used to, you know, most doctors are just they have to be very, you know, very scientific and very factual, and I thought this would just throw them over the deep end, and they'd probably want to, you know, commit me somehow. But eventually I got up the courage to talk to my primary care physician, and I really didn't know how he was going to react until the very end. I basically told him what I told you, and his expression was so beautiful. He said, "How cool is that?" And he said, "I totally believe you." I've seen it happen with other of my patients, and it's more common than often we, meaning doctors, often we let you on to believe, meaning the patients. He said, "I see it more often than I talk about." And it's very real. It's a very real phenomenon. And in his belief system, it is exactly what I described. It is, you know, basically in my mind, the divine gave me an opportunity to turn back toward the light and to come home, and that's what I'm doing. And he said, "Well, that's what you've been asked to do, so go out and do it." So it was very supportive. He was very helpful, and I was surprised they were as supportive as they were, so that was nice.
Well, it was interesting because when I birthed my daughter, I was out for about 45 minutes until they brought me out after they told my husband that we had a daughter. And they actually used the paddles to bring me back. And so the next day, and this was so many years ago, I mean, this would have been 1959. And so it was really before I was awake and aware of a lot of these things. I'd never talked and heard other people like you talk about in NDEs at all. And so I made the nurses take me back into the delivery room the next day. I said, "I want to see the bright light that's in that ceiling." And, of course, there was no bright light in the ceiling. Or there was nothing that even resembled that. But it was not anything that anyone around me had ever experienced or had any idea of what was going on. So I was and of course this is enough years ago that I think the consciousness and the awareness of many people having the near-death experience and getting that information out, it makes it maybe more believable or more accepted, at least, than it was way back there.
Right.
So that's just curious what they had to say.
Well, thanks for sharing that. Yeah, we've, you know, I'm lucky today in that a lot of pioneers have gone before me. You know, like Dr. Moody and Dr. Jeffrey Long and Evan Alexander and Anita Moriani, many others too, not just them, but there have been many, many others, you know, and Frances Ellis too, have paved the way for me to be able to say this without too much. I mean, there's a little bit of, you know, there's a little bit of kickback, I guess, from certain people, but nowadays it is more accepted. It's more, maybe not as well understood still as we like, but at least it is accepted as a valid experience and can teach us a lot about what comes after, you know, death or what death is like. In my case, I, you know, had two brushes with it. I had the one during the accident, which I really didn't talk about too much. And then the one, you know, during the surgery. But I was surprised at how painless and easy the death experience really is. So, yeah, very, very enlightening days that we're coming into, I hope.
One of the questions that I have from a listener here, people text me and email me sometimes rather than to call in. And like I mentioned before, if you do wish to call and talk, ask questions, you can do that at 888-429-5471. And that's a free call for you from the United States and Canada. If you want to call in and ask a question, you can do that. But one of the text messages here is, did you have any sense of what people talk about hell or what that is? I mean, we always hear about the NDEs, about the light. Is there ever any sense of, or you're questioning if there is a darker place?
Right. Well, I didn't actually experience that myself. I will start off by saying that there have been a few other NDE experiencers who have had hellish experiences, and I haven't really delved into that too much with them, so I can only really talk about, you know, my own experience. I didn't really ask about it. They didn't, you know, the woman that was there with me and the others that were sort of in the background didn't go into it with me. I did get a sense that, you know, they weren't real happy. She wasn't, especially the woman that was with me, wasn't real happy with some of the choices that I'd made, but I was still loved, you know, by the divine. But that didn't really let me off the hook. You know, they made it clear that I was being given a chance to come back and change my life. So I had an opportunity to change things up. Now, I take that in my own personal life to mean that there actually might be, you know, if I do something really horrible to hurt someone else, I might have to face some kind of payback, if you will, when I finally do pass on for real. At this point, I can tell you my philosophy going forward and my outlook going forward is, I've walked back into the light. I am not going to do anything at all if I can help it to keep me from going back to that heavenly loving place when I die. So I've basically changed my tune 180 degrees and have gone back and explored and gotten myself back into a loving spiritual state. And you know, I'm just kind of operating under the assumption that, yeah, there actually might be some kind of a place or a state that you might want to call hell. I don't know that for sure, but that's kind of how I'm going forward and really have changed my life a lot in response to that. So thanks for asking that question.
Okay. Let's see if we have anything else anyone has asked here.
Nancy?
Is there anything yeah. Go ahead, Tara.
Okay. Nancy, this is Tara.
Hi.
I had a near-death experience as well. Not on a bike, though. That sounds unbelievable. but I was dead on arrival for 19 minutes. This is way back in 1977. And I was a lot younger than I am now. But I did have some, I had some alternate experiences where I literally got catapulted. I was out of my body quite, I mean, I was, you know, I went through the windshield of the car and got thrown out to the pavement. And so when I did have a little bit of, you know, I was still out, but I was conscious and I could see from the ceiling in the hospital. I could see what they were doing to me. And then I got like sucked like through a pinhole of light. I mean, I could see and sense more than even see, you know. I mean, my eyes were closed, but a pinhole of light, and I got sucked through it, and now it was like this light that was just racing at me, or I was racing toward it. I couldn't tell which at that point. And then there was this being that I think was Sananda, you know, and he had a little child's hand in hand with him, and he telepathically said, "This little one wants you to be his mother. What do you think?" And it was like instantaneous. I did not hesitate for 1 second. And, I mean, that whole thing took about 19 minutes, but I had no concept of time. I just got this whole piece, and then I went from that blinded by the light place where this came to me, back to that pinhole, and then I was back on the ceiling, and then I was watching everybody in the room, and then I got back in that body, and then I realized how things were in the physical, and it was like, oh. But I had a broken neck, and I had glass all over me, you know, in my skin, in my, and actually when I came back around, I mean, it was true that I was in a lot of pain, but I was also in this altered state at the same time, so it wasn't so, it was different, and I just thought, well, I didn't break as many bones as you did, but I broke something pretty serious called my neck.
Yeah, and, pretty serious.
Yeah, and I do remember feeling like I was bleeding inside my brain. I do remember feeling that. I actually remember feeling that. Yeah. And it kind of scared me. But so are all your bones healed?
Yeah, actually, for the most part, they are. I had there's still a little bit of healing left going on in my lower back. That was a really big traumatic break, and they ended up putting in some titanium rods to fuse everything together, and they expect that to be maybe another 6 to 12 months in healing, but I'm not really in any pain. And in fact, you mentioned that being in that kind of blissed out state, I was that way too after mine, and the doctors in the hospital didn't know what to make of it. They said, "You should be on pain medication. There's no way you should be walking." And I was not on pain meds. The only thing I took after my surgery was Tylenol occasionally. You know, if things started to, mostly it was for my ribs. I broke 5 ribs, and the ribs actually were the things that hurt the most. And sometimes those would twinge, and I'd take some Tylenol. And then initially the incision actually for the surgery hurt a little bit, but, so I was on Tylenol for a few days, but I didn't really feel any pain. I was up walking around with this, you know, incision and all broken bones, and the doctors couldn't believe it. They just couldn't believe it. They called me Iron Lady.
I think, you know, I think what it is that you have. I know what it is now. I mean, I didn't know exactly everything because I was just like, what happened here? But you have an altered state of awareness about the value of every moment of life. Right. And that energy that's really the nature of our joyous self was just exuding from having that experience. It's just so stunning that it's not relatable to the ordinary routine of the doctor and the hospital and nurse even, you know. Maybe a nurse, you know, a nurse might have more awareness because of the experiences that they have with people when they're really usually the first people to be able to communicate with people when they come back around and stuff.
Right. But, yeah, that's a great explanation for it. Yeah, I just felt like, and you may have felt that too, I was just exuding joy and love, and I was, felt
yes.
like I was still connected to God in a very, very real way. I still feel that, you know, it still hasn't gone away. I'm sort of walking around
right.
in a blissed out state anyway.
It is a total gift.
Have you ever met the driver or have any interaction with that person?
Well, you know, because of the way that the injuries were, she was prosecuted for four different felonies. And with those here in Colorado, the judge automatically puts a restraining order on both parties. So they don't want anybody talking to anybody else, which I understand, except through attorneys. And her attorney did contact me, and, you know, he said, you know, my client's very sorry for what happened and what she did. And the only words that I really had to, you know, I sent back were, you know, I hope she takes this as an opportunity to really learn responsible driving. I'm not angry with her. And I made sure he knew that. I said, please tell her I'm not angry with her. I just want her to get her life back together. Because she was in a bad place, too, from what I understand. And I said, I just wish her the best in getting her life back together. And, you know, that was one thing that my family were surprised about, too, especially my niece, for some reason. She said, I'm surprised you're not horribly angry at this woman. And I said, no, I'm not. I just wish her the best. I wish her love. And I hope she walks down a good path from here on out. That's really the only interaction I've had. I hope she's, you know, I hope she's got that message from her attorney, from me, and that she's made some good positive changes in her life.
I had one more experience I didn't share here. There was this couple, and I mean, I know I got to meet them because they were there. They were the only ones that were there. It was going over the Kennedy Expressway, which is the name of in Chicago, the expressway.
Right.
And I was going over that. This is how the accident happened, and there was somebody coming on the off ramp, but they were going way too fast. And it was a young person, and they had, I think, their dad's car or something. It was a humongous, heavy-duty Oldsmobile. And I was in this little Dodge Dart, so I was in like a toothpick, you know, box. And they had these big walls for construction all the way up, all the way down, you know, the railing. So you couldn't see over the down on the expressway. You couldn't see anything. And it was, about 10 feet high because they were fixing stuff there. And it went right around the corner of the off ramp. So he couldn't see me. I couldn't see him. But he was going, I think he was inebriated because he was going about 60 miles an hour on the off ramp.
Wow.
And I should really be dead. But they saved my life because this was a subway driver. The husband was, and the wife. So he had a what do you call those special radios?
Like a shortwave.
A shortwave radio, and he called the hospital. He knew where it was and everything, and he said,
wow.
Get over here. It was the hospital. The ambulance was there in 3 minutes. That was 3 minutes away, the hospital. I don't think I would have had the same situation, you know, even at that. I mean, I was gone for so long. But to this day, without that experience, I don't know which path I would have been on. I'm just saying, you know.
Yeah.
And you can't, the value of that cannot be numbered in any way or shape. And so they came over to meet me. They actually, afterwards, I went to my friend's house, you know, right after everything was settled. That didn't take really long because I'm just going to say that, you know, they didn't know half of the stuff that was going on with me, but they did the best they could, and I learned a lot more later on. But these people actually came to see me, and they must have had an experience where they, I mean, when they came to see me, I could feel like they were just so happy that they were there to be an interceder. So they had an experience too.
Oh, yeah, they could have. Yep.
Yeah.
I've heard of that before. I don't know that it happened in my case, but yeah, I have heard of that before. How wonderful.
Yeah. I mean, and the fact that we could all see and grow from that and then share this moment today, you know, it's just wonderful. Yeah. So thank you.
Yeah, it was a growth experience for everyone. That's the best, you know, when that can happen.
Yes. So, yeah. Sister, what can you tell us about what you're doing with your life now after all of that?
Well, I've gone back and taken a really good long look at going back into a spiritual practice and in restoring my faith, which I have. It's not exactly the faith that I had during my childhood, but it's more, I think, a more adult, loving, you know, God-centered, divine-centered space, if you will. And surprisingly enough, learned contemplative prayer, which for me, and centering prayer for me, which really is one way that I go back and experience that state all over again. That's everybody could, you know, find a different way of experiencing divine love. That happens to be the way that seems to work best for me right now. So that's a regular part of my day. I learned that from the Franciscans, and while I don't consider myself a Franciscan, I do go to church. It's a Unity Church now every day, or not every day, excuse me, every week. And I have a daily spiritual practice, and gratitude is a strong part of that. Forgiveness is a strong part of that. Trying to be, you know, as loving as I humanly can, realizing that I'm not always going to be perfect. And, you know, part of that is realizing that when I do mess up, I don't beat myself up about it. I, you know, make amends and continue on and go back to practicing my, you know, loving ways if I can. So that's, you know, that's a large part of my daily practice, and I try to be mindful of that as much as I can throughout the day. You know, for me, I think for most of us, it's very difficult to be mindful of, you know, being kind and loving and compassionate for every moment. But, you know, I try to do it more often than not. And, you know, the more I practice that, the better, the easier it gets. It's not perhaps always going to be super easy, but there are, you know, we're challenged with people, and, you know, everybody is challenged with people that you don't necessarily agree with or who don't like you or who you don't like. And, you know, for me, that's the challenge, is learning how to extend compassion and love to those people, even if there isn't a really, you know, loving relationship there like you might have with a friend or a family member. So that's what I'm doing now. I'm beginning to teach some of the things that I learned to other people. And I'm taking some more contemplative prayer workshops with the folks down in New Mexico. That would be the Franciscans, Father Richard Rohr, and his group of folks. They seem to kind of be able to teach that to me better than I can learn it on my own. And, you know, I'm actually working on a second book. I realized that there's so much more information that I was given that I wasn't really prepared yet to share in that first book. And more comes to me as I put these practices into my daily life, as I try to practice what I was taught. You know, I learn how to teach people about these concepts a little bit easier. And so I want to extend, you know, some of that outward, and I've got a workbook that's going to be coming up soon that will, I think, add another layer of of content and exercises, things that people can do if they choose or try to do if they want to, you know, to kind of bring some of these principles into their lives. So that's where I'm headed. I'm doing some speaking as well. I've got some speaking engagements coming up here in the Denver area. I've got a workshop coming up in early September. I'm doing a panel discussion in October with some folks here in Denver, and then I just got a wonderful invitation today to do a panel discussion next March, so March of 2016, here in Vail, Colorado, to do an NDE panel discussion with Dr. Eben Alexander, which I feel very honored and blessed to be included in that. So I'm looking forward to that. So that's kind of where I'm headed in the next, you know, 6 to 8 months. And we'll continue practicing my love and light.
So what, do you live here in New Mexico, sister? Nancy?
Oh, no, I live in Colorado. I'm up in the Boulder area of Colorado.
So you come down to New Mexico to work with the Franciscan father.
Right. And I'm going to be taking some of the online classes. They have an online, and it's partially online, partially in-person workshop that's going to start here in the next few months, and I'm going to be signing up for that. So I'll be doing some of the study up here and then some of it down in New Mexico.
So do you know what town he's in, or is he in Santa Fe?
Well, I don't remember now exactly where the in-person workshops are going to be. There is going to be some discussion going on down in Albuquerque.
Okay.
He's got a workshop coming up in Albuquerque. These individual, it's not individual, this retreat center, and I'm not exactly sure where this retreat center that he's going to be using is located. I believe it's up north of Albuquerque, up towards Santa Fe.
Oh, and what's his name?
Father Richard Rohr, R-O-H-R.
Okay. Just interesting that you're sharing that, and it's somewhere in my neighborhood, so I'm kind of curious.
Yeah, take a look. It's there's also another group of folks that do something similar. I can't remember the guy's name. It's Father Thomas Keating that also hosts the same, very similar types of workshops.
Father Thomas Keating?
Keating, K-E-A-T-I-N-G.
Whoops, yep, you're breaking up a little bit, sister. Father Thomas Keating?
Correct, K-E-A-T-I-N-G.
Oh, thank you.
You're welcome.
Does he have a website?
He does. I can go look at, bring it up. I don't remember what it is off the top of my head here. But he does both actually have websites. And I can look those up for you and get those while we're chatting.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I know that I grew up with Franciscan nuns. I went to all girls schools in high school, and I really, really connected with the Franciscan nuns. Yes,
yeah. I
said it's so fascinating to see how we all get moved around as little pawns to make all these connections. Because my friend Gary is here visiting with his daughter, who wants to learn about the organic farming and what the possibilities might be for life work in that area. And when we had our guest tonight got double booked, and so he said, "Well, I will get on the phone." And so he called Nancy. So he's here from Colorado in my home, and he calls somebody else in Colorado to come and be our guest. So it's just interesting how if we allow, the universe provides and connects us. And, you know, I'm just grateful that he was here and could make the connection, and that Nancy had the ability and the courage and also the time to, on short notice, to come and be our guest tonight. So
it's wonderful how those connections happen.
It's just wonderful how life works.
It is, so,
yeah. Do we have any other questions by any of the team here? We'll take a moment just for the one last time, 888-429-5471. If you want to call in and ask a question, you need to do it soon because we're coming up close to the top of the hour. So, Nancy, what else would you like to share with us before we close out the end of the hour here?
Well, I gave a little bit of a talk today too. I was triple booked today, which is great. I love getting out and talking with people. But one of the things that this group that I spoke with today, really what they seemed to want to know about was how we have the ability, you know, to choose our path and how that kind of connects in with all of this that I talked about. And you know, folks asked, you know, I spoke to them and said, you know, I really didn't want to come back to my life, but I had agreed to do this thing. I agreed to come back, and, you know, I agreed to have this experience and to learn from it and grow from it. And so, I can't remember who it was that asked, but somebody asked, well, it sounds like you didn't have a choice. And I said, well, I didn't have a choice in coming back. That was certainly something that wasn't an option for me, but I did have a choice in coming forward with all of this. And granted, I had agreed, you know, to bring these teachings into my own life, and I also agreed to share it with the people in my family and my friends. But I also had the choice not to share. It wasn't something that I necessarily had to do. And they asked, well, you know, how much choice do we have in our lives, or is everything really predestined? And that was a great, really super question. You know, we all, from what I learned when I was in that near-death state in heaven with my guide, whoever she was, I didn't really have a sense that everything was predestined. We do have a lot of choice here in our lives. We have the ability, you know, to choose our own path. In fact, they told me that we have, in every moment, we have our own ability to choose our own path, and that's okay. We have the ability to say yes to the light or no to the light, or to treat someone well or to treat someone poorly. It's all up to us. And what really counts is obviously the choices we make, because those choices really, they kind of emanate outward from us. And my guide showed this to me very, very visually with the ripples on a pond. You know, every time we make a decision, whether it be one for the positive or one for the negative, it emanates outward from us. It affects the people around us, both in a very real, you know, physical way, meaning I can hurt you if I say something hurtful to you, but also in a very spiritual way. So I took that to mean that God's always listening, the divine is always listening, the divine is always tuned into us no matter what we do, every minute of every day. We're tuned into that divine love and that divine energy. And so we may think we're trying to get away with something, but we're not. Everybody on the spiritual plane knows what's going on at any given time, especially God. And so while we do have the opportunity to choose our own life, you know, we're being asked to make the choice for the light and to treat people well in each and every moment if we can, because those good positive choices strengthen the love in the world around us. And that's what, you know, I was asked to do. Specifically, that was asked for me to focus on, was strengthening the love right there in my own world and working on that. And and then teaching other folks how to do that as well. So that's another profound thing to kind of talk about today. Yep.
We do have a caller. Caller, okay. Deborah wants to ask you a question, Nancy. Deborah, what's your question?
Hi. I want to thank Nancy and Tara for sharing your story, because I had a similar experience where I accessed the astral plane, the etheric plane. My question is, with the ascension and with us going to 5D, won't those planes be merging so that, I mean, not just people who have near-death experiences or who do spirit world regressions will be able to access that plane. Everybody, I think, will be able to transit back and forth, between 3D reality and 5D or beyond. Isn't that true?
Well, I can speak to that maybe a little bit, and I think maybe some other folks might have more knowledge of that than I do. I will say that I sure hope that that's the case, and I'm beginning to see it in people around me. I think the more people hear about experiences like ours that we've talked about tonight, the more people open up to that possibility, and the more people start to access that even now in their prayer, in their meditation, if they have out-of-body experiences. So I think, in my personal opinion, yeah, I think it's coming. Does anybody else want to address that?
Well, we do have a caller, Carlton, that wants to ask another question. So, Carlton, what's your question about?
Hey, Satnam, and Namaskar to everybody. Nancy, thank you for sharing your story. I'm glad that you heeded the message that was given to you to share with the rest of the world. So I'm just curious, how often now are you in touch with this guide? And since that happened, is that a consistent thing, and or not?
Well, a lot of folks ask me that, and I'm on a minute by minute basis with the divine. I feel the divine presence in my life pretty much constantly right now. I don't know if that's ever going to go away. I hope not, because this feels really good. But I do. When I have questions, I often ask questions aloud to both God and my guide. And I will often get answers, and it isn't necessarily, an answer that I hear verbally. In fact, I've never heard it that way. I will often have things happen in my life right after I ask about them. So, in fact, yesterday, I was asking God or my guide. I always address either one, whoever wants to help me. And I asked about, what's coming up next for me? I had kind of a lull day yesterday. I didn't have a whole lot going on. And so I asked, so what's coming up next for me? I want to keep working on this. And then lo and behold, today, I just got inundated with requests, and this radio show was one of them. So that's sort of how some of the things happen. I ask, and then a day later, I get just inundated with answers. Sometimes the answers come to me.
Hey, you know what? Mm-hmm. If I could ask you just really quick, because I know time is short, there might be some other people behind me, I don't know.
Sure.
But please feel free to elaborate on that. But also, what is your feeling and understanding now about your own divinity? And what's your feeling about atheism? And then I'll hang up. Thank you.
My own divinity. Well, I've seen one of the things that I was taught was that everyone, including myself, has a light of the divine inside. And so we are all part of that divine love in a very real way. What I think about atheism, it isn't for me anymore. I chose to walk away from that path. And, for some people, that may be the right path that they need to be on right now. It's not up to me to judge that. That's their path that they're walking on, and I realize now that that isn't the path that I want to be on anymore. So I've personally in my own life turned away from that path. I hope that answers your question.
One of the things that we haven't done yet, and I want to make sure that we do, is tell people, remind them again about the name of the book. And this is Nancy, R-Y-N-E-S, and also to tell them your website and how they can find more information. So okay. Would you please share that?
Sure. The book is called Awakenings from the Light, and it's available on Amazon.com. You can also request it from your local bookstore. It's fairly new, so I don't know that too many bookstores outside of Colorado would stock it quite yet, but you can certainly request it. It is available on all the distribution channels. But again, it's on Amazon.com, Awakenings from the Light. It's in paperback or Kindle format, so you can get it as an ebook if you prefer. My website, you can contact me through my website. It's just my name, Nancy Ryans, RYNES.com. So I'll spell that out again. It's Nancy, NancyRYNES.com. And that's the best way to get in touch with me if you'd like. And I've got information on there about upcoming events and a little bit more information on the book and questions. And you can sign up for a newsletter and free giveaways and all that good stuff.
And Nancy, did you find Richard Rohr's website?
Center for Action and Contemplation.
Ooh.
And let me, yep. And let's see, it's just cac.org.
Oh, that's all. It's just three letters.
Yep, cac.org. Really easy. I should have remembered that. And then the other one, Thomas Keating's website is contemplativeoutreach.org. So contemplativeoutreach.org. But if you Google Thomas Keating, you should be able to find that as well. His website, it's actually a group. He's just the founder of it. But their website has a lot more if you want to do online coursework or if you want to just order a pamphlet or order a CD. They have a little bit more distance learning material than CAC.org has.
I like this. You know, this is kind of gives that, I guess that's the right word. Now, when you use the word contemplation, the next thing I think of is, you know, mysticism, you know, that mystical mm-hmm. experience. That's really, right. I think if you were to name it, that's pretty much what that experience is all about.
Right, it is, yeah. In fact, they talk about that on their website quite a bit, is the Christian mystic tradition is what they're trying to carry on. So, yeah.
Thomas More.
mm-hmm.
Yep. Thank you so much, sister. It's been wonderful to talk with you.
Thank you.
It's just a reminder that be careful what you ask for, Nancy. You know, yesterday you asked, I think the other takeaway from this is, you know, they are listening, and if you ask and you request, I mean, how much quicker could you... Yeah. Have an answer to your question than the very next day.
Right. Yeah, they are listening all the time. God is listening. Your spirit guides are listening. They're there for you, and they actually like listening. So talk. I like to talk just to talk to them. So they like interacting with us as much as we allow them to. So open that door up.
Well, we really appreciate you asking the question yesterday, so it made the space open, and I'm grateful to Gary for being here and introducing us here in the on the next day after you ask, and we really appreciate you sharing your experiences with you with us, and Awakenings from the Light is the name of the book, and if you want to find this, as she said, you can just go to her website, which is her name, and that will be a way that you can find out more. And, of course, it is available. It is a 2015 book, so if it's not in your local bookstore, you can request it or ask for it. And so support Nancy for sharing her time and energy and her experiences with us. And anything else you want to say as we sign off this section?
Well, thank you so much. I appreciate you guys all, and much love and blessings to all of you. Thank you for having me tonight.
Well, we are blessed to have you, and we will take a musical break now before we go into the last hour, when Tara and Rama will have some more things to share with us. So, music maestro, please. Okay, Marita, are you still there? Marita? Well, I'm here. Rama's here. Say hello. I just wanted to tell you, Marita, if you can hear me, I can't hear you, but that was awesome.
It was.
That energy is exactly where we are right now.
Love is the answer.
And the nonsense going on at these other realms is just the reason why the nonsense is here, is because of what's really going on and what's coming in now. Thank you, everybody. I was just saying when that went, I don't know how much you heard, but I was saying that it was interesting just in the last little while they were making a big thing out of the fact that Bill Clinton and Donald Trump are, and Hillary, they're like good friends. And I think Bill and Hillary went to his wedding, for this third wife wedding too, and that Donald Trump gave $100,000 to Hillary in the past. I can't remember when, but somewhere in there. And you know, Tom was conjecturing that, or people on Tom's show were conjecturing that, just that that there might, they were saying that, what if this is all set up to have Donald Trump kind of bust all these Republicans to the point where people will just make it into a joke, and that'll give Hillary the post, you know.
The nominee, yeah.
And they didn't plan on Bernie Sanders, let me tell you.
He is that wild card. I believe in fairies.
Well, and again, as we have been told, he's a lead-in for Michelle to get on the ticket here when it's appropriate.
That's right.
I mean, Lady Di and Doty don't just call everybody on the block from the Wesak Valley whenever, you know, and say, hey,
heads up.
Did you ask them about, or you didn't know about that? You know, there's the suggestion that China's going to do some mass arrests this Saturday.
I didn't get
Benjamin Fulford said that.
Yeah, I kind of heard some rumors, but they didn't.
That's like sounding to me like he doesn't want to count the faction Three White Knights. He wants to talk about the Chinese.
I didn't get to ask him that. I maybe get...
You'll get another opportunity to ask somebody.
Mañana.
Yeah, and, you know, it's just like the other day, President Obama, he announced this clean power plan. Whoa-wee.
Yeah.
And then he gave this other talk. You know, it seems like we're seeing him every other day, but he said, you know, and Tom Hartman said that too, that in reality that the Republicans and others who, and you know, the what they call them, the Republicrats, the Democrats that are playing like they're Democrats, but they're not, are the blue dog Democrats sometimes, are another, not quite so intense, but that they, what they really are saying is that they want war. They don't want peace.
That's right.
And they don't want dialogue. And they don't want, they don't want, they don't want. And again, the people of Iran, they have been the most severely affected by these sanctions.
And this is something very interesting. Iran is the saffron capital of the planet. And since the sanctions have been in place, saffron is $2,000 a pound out there.
What?
Yeah.
And you can get saffron in the store for some kind of a reasonable amount of money.
Saffron's pretty pricey these days, but I'm just saying, and I am.
Oh, that's a pound or something. How much pound? Oh, that's ridiculous.
Yeah, $2,000 a pound.
But you need very, very teeny tiny bit.
You need a wee little bit.
A little bit of pinch for a whole.
Yeah, but saffron is like turmeric and... you know, I use curry in our food every day, and that gets rid of cancer, pure and simple.
I'm just going to say that John Stewart is such a hoot. We got to play. There's so many things to play. I can't do to figure out which one to play.
Yeah.
And now we've got this global meditation. You know, there's more than enough abundance all the way around the block now. Chuck Schumer saying goodbye. Oh, Hillary Clinton saying goodbye. Mika and Joe Scarborough. Mayor Romney. You know, oh, what a dirtball. Oh, my God. Wolf Blitzer. Screw you, Stewart. It says I wolf. He's called everybody on the carpet, Senator Kerry, too. Yep. Bill O'Reilly. He's had all these people on his show. Who is that? I remember when he had that. Who is that guy? John McCain. Oh, it's a puppet of John McCain. You know, I think that John Stewart's going to play a big role. He's going to come in a much bigger way. You know, like Rachel went back to 2010 when she had John Stewart on her show and interviewed him there. I haven't seen or listened to all of it. There's just too many people. There's just too many people. This John Stewart, and Rama said he heard a rumor that John Stewart may run for a position in Congress.
That's right.
That is going to flip everybody right around.
As he gets
All going to say, get out of here, you Republicans. They are. You know, Al Franken and now John Stewart. Who else can we get in there?
Yeah.
I'm just going to say that this is the time. This is our day. Freedom, 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 everybody. Okay, I was just going to say, we've got a few minutes here, but I thought I would go back and read Mahalo's astrology. And she starts with Happy New Year, you know, on July 26th. And it's for August, but she goes back there. She says, okay, so let me just read this. It says, today is July 28th, and I wanted to write about the dream spell New Year earlier, yet life got in my way. So I am writing about it now. The first day of the New Year was on July 26, 2015, and it was on the glyph of the white planetary wizard. Now, I think everybody knows what a wizard is. It is someone who can create magic. This means that we are in a year as magic and miracles will start to happen in abundance. Let's do abundance. Doesn't that sound like a lot of fun? Of course, we have to be out of the energy of fear before we can create magic. The White Wizard is ruled by Lilith, the dark moon that orbits around our sun.
Black moon Lilith.
Yeah, well, they say here when she can be only seen or photographed as she is in front of our sun, then she appears as a red ball of light. Ruby Ray, maybe we will start to see her soon. She has been on a vibration that we cannot and have not been able to see because we were manifesting a lower consciousness, 3D, 4D, or 5D. Lilith rules magic and miracles. Maybe we will be able to see her as we start manifesting 6D energy. It's my understanding that we were on a 6D Earth as we fell into a 3D Earth.
Yeah.
We need to get back to 6D and experience the energy of magic and miracles. The White Wizard is known as the healer or a magician. The wizard is a tool of light, a conduit for the work of spirit. A wise wizard allows magic to come in rather than trying to control it or make it happen.
This is what I remember from the land of Pan as the light wizard. Where
yeah, until you got yourself stuck in an amethyst crystal for 3,000 years.
Well,
and that's the one. One of the first things Rama said is he says, "I learned how to like to watch."
Yes.
Smarty pants. Anyway, a wise wizard allows magic to come in rather than trying to control or make it happen. In the past, people were born under this. Who were born under this sign were chosen to be priests or priestesses. The tone of the White Wizard is planetary and is one of manifestation. The power of manifestation is love. With love, we can access the freedom and the power to experience whatever we desire. It sounds like our guest today, Nancy. Beautiful energy. The first day of the dream spell calendar is based on the star Sirius, rising ever over Egypt on July 26th. Uh-oh. Steve Colbert just showed up on the Jon Stewart show. Jon Stewart is having a real lot of problems, boy. He's having to stay connected and deal with this. This is hard to say goodbye to all these people. And he's not going anywhere. I'm going to tell you, he's going to show up in so many places.
That's right.
Whatever we desire. The first day of the dream spell calendar is based on the star Sirius rising over Egypt on July 26th every single year. This is as Sirius rises at the same time as our sun, and we can see two suns in our heavens as we live in Egypt or the surrounding area. Sirius is a blue star sun. Some people consider Sirius the mother of our sun. This is true because we're part of the Sirian constellation. That's exactly right. Yeah. There is also a black hole on 3 degrees Leo, which opens to a different dimension. And I think that is why it is called the Lion's Gate. This may be the gate to ascension. In ancient times, people used to go into the pyramids and go through a ceremony to ascend to a higher frequency. Some made it and others did not. Many people think that the Mayan calendar was complete on December 21st, 2012. That cycle did complete, and one calendar was over, although other Mayan calendars go on for eternity. The dream spell calendar was brought to our attention by Jose Arguelles as he created the first mass conscious holiday called Harmonic Convergence, August 1987. I was there, were you? I was up in the mountains in Colorado. What was the name of that place again? I was up at 10,000 feet, and we were staying in our tent and in a sleeping bag. So we had a whole bunch of people with a fire and the seven sisters. I mean, seven starships showed up. And then we had the radio going out there outside. And Jose Arguelles played this something called Harmony of the Spheres. It was a 4-minute, absolutely unbelievable, angelic recording.
I was here in the City of Holy Faith with Queen Zardoz. And I was channeling Mother. She was channeling Metatron for a group of 50 people.
Where in Santa Fe?
At a bookstore that's not here anymore. I forgot the name of the bookstore.
Okay.
I mean, that was.
And then the Ark showed up.
Yep.
Okay, so anyway, she's saying, Mahala's saying, I was there, were you? I had been focusing on peace with the John Price Group for years, and very much so in August of 87. According to the Cryon, Book 3, and I was in audience for this teaching called Earth Changes, Your Wake-Up Call. It was the focus on peace and love prior to the to and on August 87 harmonic convergence that finally brought our planet to a frequency higher than the original grid the Cryon group had created on this earth so there could be life here. As they came after the harmonic convergence to measure the Hertz rate of the earth and found it higher, it was significant enough to save this experiment. That's right. I remember that, and remember the photon belt locked on, too. On harmonic convergence from the great central sun Alcyone in the Pleiades, that photon belt traveled 400 light years and completely locked onto our planet. We were still wobbling on the outer periphery at that time. So, they went about destroying what was called the Death Rock, headed toward this planet. Okay, Ron. Oh, my God. Oh, we're going to have an awesome time with this Daily Show thing when we play it for everybody. That's all I can say. Okay. Destroying the Death Rock. So they went about destroying what was called the Death Rock, headed toward this planet intended to destroy a major continent here. This object of concern headed for our planet before we raise the frequency is also verified by London scientific observers who were expecting it to strike Earth, yet mysteriously disappeared just in time. This gathering of people from all over the world jumped us into a fourth dimension timeline. And I'm going to correct that for those who were present and attending it. And Dahani Yahoo said, sorry, but it actually was the close of the fifth dimension doorway, and we entered the beginnings of the age of the sixth sun way back on harmonic convergence.
Yeah, right.
And that is the truth. Yet, for those who had no experience or weren't ready for that, there were other things available as well. So all things are what they are, and they all have relevancy, you know, to our path. In other words, everything serves for the highest good at all moments in time. And that is as a lot of people woke up and started their journey toward the light. The fourth dimension is also where the controllers live, and they control the world. Both third and fourth dimension from the fourth dimension. That dimension includes everything, good, bad, and ugly. You got that right. As you are manifesting 5D energy, they cannot control you. And as Nancy, Sister Nancy was saying, is that remembering to stay in that loving presence of that joy, that mystical experience, and contemplation can be a constant way of life. It really can, you know. Washing a dish, and you can wash the aura of the planet, like I was saying before. Okay, so as we are manifesting 5D energy, they cannot control you. This time, their time is now up, because we have moved into higher dimensional consciousness, where freedom will soon manifest fully. We are manifesting the part in Revelation where the controllers go down and they are thrown into the pit of fire. After their fall, we will start to manifest a new heaven and a new earth. Isn't that exciting? A lot of people are in a lot of fear right now because they have not released the fear that is in them. It is time to finish releasing that into the love vibration. Love is indeed all there is. I look at this upcoming time as one of magic and miracles. I am working on feeling only love and to not judge anyone for anything they do or think. We are all children of the One. We have been in the energy of Saturn square Jupiter for several months now. This is the energy of financial ups and downs, which has been very apparent on Earth. Right after this full moon of July 31st, the square between these two planets will be complete on August 2nd at 3:37 a.m. Pacific Daylight Time. Oh, we just passed that already. Mm-hmm. I am not saying that the financial challenge will be over at this time, yet as we look back at this day, we will see that it was the turning point. Saturn moved into direct motion on August 1st, and I wonder as this will be the end of the karmic cycle and the beginning of something new. Saturn will be opposing Alcyone, the great central sun, and busy raising the frequency on Earth until mid-September. However, Saturn is now in forward motion, moving towards Sagittarius. As Saturn moves into Sag, this is the time period as we will indeed start to manifest freedom's holy flame and a brand new financial system. The Lion's Gate is complete August 8, 2015. 8-8-8. Yes, 2015 also adds on to an makes an 8. What a wonderful day that will be. This coming Saturday, everybody, people are calling this the Magdalene Goddess Gateway. The number 8 is one of the numbers of the goddess, along with the numbers 5 and 13. Venus is the planet of the goddess, and that planet is associated with the numbers 5 and 8. My birthday yesterday on the 5th of August in the 8-8 Lionsgate window. And, that was also on the 5th of August every year. It's the Feast of Our Lady of the Snows, another aspect of the goddess energy. Because of its orbit, okay, so the goddess and that planet is, Venus is the planet of the goddess, and that planet is associated with the numbers 5 and 8 because of its orbit through our solar system, which ends up forming a five-pointed star. This is true. We're almost done with this. We're in here because we can just listen to a little more of Nassim. The number 13, just got one more paragraph. The number 13 is associated with our sun and has always been considered one of the goddess numbers. The dream spell calendar is based on the number 13 and 20. That's why we kept our website 1320, everybody. There are 13 cycles and 20 glyphs. The Mayans look on the Pleiadian star system as their home. Mm-hmm. Alcyone, the great central sun, is the central sun of that system. And Earth is also part of that system. We are the eighth planet in the Pleiadian star system. In the Pleiadian star system, we are the eighth planet. How interesting is that? Oh, that's right, because the seven sisters and then we're eight. How wild. What exciting times we have to look forward to. As soon as we wake up to the great beings we are and to start living only in love. Love can move mountains. We got to play Celine Dion's Love Can Move Mountains. And love is glue that holds the universe together. With love, we move into unity consciousness, and united we stand, divided we fall. It is our choice. In the presence of love, all is well. So be it. I send you all love, light, and blessings of abundance. Mahala Gale. All right, everybody. Let's do our Nassim, brother Nassim here. Okay, Ram? Yes, here we go.
On the planet, some of the greatest genius we've ever had, talking about space being the most important thing we should study, but the most important thing we should explore, and the source of most of what we experience. So why would these guys say that? Because these guys don't get to say anything if it's not written in some equation somewhere, right? You know, they can't just start philosophizing about space. I mean, they can, but then they would get the big poo-poo from the rest of the physics community. So how do they come to conclusions? Well, in order to understand how they came to those conclusions, we're going to have to do a little physics. I'm going to try to keep it simple. But we're going to do a little, you know, math as well throughout this lecture. Quantum mechanics was actually discovered because Max Planck was hired to improve on light bulbs. You all know that? So Max Planck had this contract to improve the light bulb in the late 1800s. And he had to figure out, you know, the thermodynamic radiation of a filament in the light bulb to try to figure out how he could make it run more efficient and last longer and put out more light and do all this stuff. And in order to do that, he had to run equations that have to do with black body radiation. That is, like the base equation to understand the radiation of an object. So imagine an object that's completely black, that absorbs all the light that's incident on it. It would heat up and radiate thermodynamically. And so those are the equations that were describing the heat emitted by objects. You know, that was the basis for thermodynamics. And so when he started to look at this, there was a problem, is that when you ran the equations, there was an ultraviolet catastrophe, as it's called in physics. That is, when you ran the equation for a black body emitting thermodynamically, the ultraviolet part of the spectrum would go to infinity. The equation said that it would radiate infinite amount of ultraviolet radiation. And that's not what they were measuring in laboratory. So, you know, there was a problem. And what Max Planck did, basically, is that he found that if he added in the equation this little fudge factor, and literally he thought it was a fudge factor when he did it. He wasn't so excited about it. He thought, this is kind of messy physics. And, you know, but he, when he added this value, right, this little value, it all came out to what was measured in the laboratory. And this value made it so that the equation was saying that actually the radiation that comes off the object is not continuous. It's not kind of like a continuous smooth curve, but it actually is coming off in little packets of energy, which eventually was called the Planck's constant or quantas. These little packets of energy were coming off the object. And so, you know, and it was counterintuitive at the time, because when you heat the water on the stove, it doesn't seem like it's going up in little quantas, but the quantas are so small that we don't measure them. It appears smooth. So that was the start. And it was able to describe these quanta of energy in relationship to the energy being emitted being his constant, this little fudge factor, right? Multiply by the frequency. And so it came out just right. And eventually it was realized that this was not a fudge factor, but actually the way things are, the way the universe works, that it emits energy in little packets, which was the base of quantum theory eventually. Planck's constant defines a little packet of energy having angular momentum called a quantum of action, which eventually leads to the Bohm atom model and the electron orbit. So he was able to show that these little packets of energy, which are little packets of angular momentum of spin, right, that these little packets of energy could be describing the way the electrons jump from one electron orbital to another, because they didn't seem to jump in a smooth fashion. They went from one orbital and then you... way the universe works, that it emits energy in little packets, which was the base of quantum theory eventually. Planck's constant defines a little packet of energy having angular momentum called a quantum of action, which eventually leads to the Bohm atom model and the electron orbit. So he was able to show that these little packets of energy, which are little packets of angular momentum of spin, right, that these little packets of energy could be describing the way the electrons jump from one electron orbital to another, because they didn't seem to jump in a smooth fashion. They went from one orbital and then you sent enough packets of energy and all of a sudden, pop, it would go to the next orbital, and pop, it would go to the next orbital. And so they were able to put these two concepts together and they got the correct answers for the orbitals of the atoms. So this was really remarkable. It gives a fundamental theory for the structure of atoms, not just, you know, the radiation of a black body emitter. So eventually, so quantum mechanics provided a fundamental foundation for a quantized theory of matter. But there was a problem. Atoms can emit spontaneously, right? It's called spontaneous emission. So without a little packet going in, all of a sudden, it popped, you know, from one to the other. And so they start to think there is something else going on. Quantum mechanics alone was unable to account for the behavior, for behaviors such as spontaneous emission of atoms in the context of a theory where the dynamics of the atom is quantized, but the electromagnetic field is not. Meaning, like, the electromagnetic field must have had little quantities that were going in there, popping these electrons spontaneously. And that was the basis that eventually led to quantum field theory. Quantum mechanics had to be generalized to express the electromagnetic field as a quantized model of oscillation as at every point in space, leading to the development of quantum field theory, eventually expressed by Paul Dirac in 1920s. So basically, they had to expand the model, not just to describe the atom as these little quantities of energy, but actually the electromagnetic field with it. And so this led to quantum field theory. But the structure of quantum field theory demanded that, like, when we actually start to quantize the field. So let me just... So quantum field theory describes space as if it was filled with interconnected discrete packets of energy and waveform, a little like balls and springs, right? So when they did that, the interaction of atoms with this lower quantum state of the electromagnetic field was what was producing the electron spontaneous emission, meaning the atoms are not just sitting in nothing. They're sitting in this basis electromagnetic field, in this fundamental field that is actually directly interacting with the atom. And that field is little quantas of energy everywhere, okay? And it's everywhere. And so when they solved this, therefore the ground state of the electromagnetic field, the vacuum itself, the structure of space itself, is critical, and all calculation in quantum field theory must be made in relation to the to a model of the vacuum, where the vacuum itself is quantized, meaning they got to the, they're trying to get to the basis of everything, and they're finding that, like, the vacuum itself, the structure of space-time itself, is made out of these little packets of energy, and it's everywhere. You guys are all following me? Okay, all right. Okay, and that's quantum field theory. And it's critical to all of the physics we write today in quantum theory. Now, so I wanted to go through this so you guys understand. When I'm talking about the energy of the vacuum, this is not a Nassim, you know, hallucination moment, like that guy took too much drugs when he was young or something. You know, this is actually in the basis of physics. And you would be surprised, it's more known now, but you would be surprised how many PhD physics students came out of universities not knowing this, okay? Because it's not obvious the way it's taught, because it's, you know, they just told, solve these equations, and you get this answer, and you apply it here, and da-da-da-da-da, and it's not taught in the context of the historic development of it, or the meaning of it. Because, in general, it makes the physicists, professors, uncomfortable. Why? Because when they solve for those little quantas of energy in the vacuum, the answer was infinity, right? The amount of energy, because you had to, like, sum up all the modes of oscillation. So imagine, you know, you got this wavelength, and then you got this wavelength, and this wavelength. And, like, there's no bottom to that, right? So, like, wait, where does this field end, right? And the equation solves saying, well, it's infinite. Infinite amount of energy in every point, right? Now, when that was solved, you can imagine, physicists didn't think, oh, we found God, right? They're like, and the other way around, they were like, oh, dude, how do we get rid of this, right? This is no good. We got to get rid of this infinite amount of energy in every point. Now, a person like you guys probably would have gone, oh, man, this must be the source of creation or something, right? But this is like almost 100 years later, we're starting to get there. Okay? It's like, oh, this field might have something to do with reality, right? Infinite amount of energy. But the, so in order for the mathematics to work, they had to get rid at least of the infinity, right? So they did something that's called renormalization. Now, it's not from what was called the vacuum catastrophe, right? They had the ultraviolet catastrophe, and it got kind of replaced with the vacuum catastrophe. And so, you know, they did something that's called renormalization. Renormalization is using a cutoff value. And hopefully, in this case, actually, they use something very significant. Hopefully, you're using something fundamental as a cutoff value, and you just say, well, the ground state cannot go below this state. Like, you can, like, there's a fundamental wavelength that you can't get below. And so using the Planck's constant and fundamental constant like G for gravity and C for the speed of light, Planck had already outputted from his theory a fundamental unit for the universe, okay, called the Planck unit, which is the only not arbitrary unit of measurement we have, right? All other measurement units are arbitrary, but this one is not because it's based on fundamental constants. You guys following this? So the Planck unit was utilized, right, which is a very specific length or a very specific time, if you like, right? So saying that the waveform of the electromagnetic field, like the photon, can get smaller and smaller, but it cannot get past this length. Right, which is extremely small, 10 to the minus 33 centimeters. So that's a period with a lot of zeros, right? It's a very, very small number. Now, do I think that the universe cannot do anything smaller? Absolutely not. I think they're sub-Planckian. But from what I found, the Planck is actually a very important fundamental pixel for our universe. And we're going to see that. It's actually a voxel because it has volume. And so it's important because the universe is in harmonic relationship. You see? So the size of our universe, if our universe is pixelated, right? If the structure of space-time is pixelated across the whole universe, then the size of our universe would define how big that pixel is, right? The whole thing would be in harmonic relationship. You guys see what I mean? And so, but how small is that pixel? Because, like, it doesn't look pixelated, you know? I mean, but you see how smooth things look on your computer? You know, and you know it's made out of pixel, but because these pixels are small, it looks smooth, right? How small is one of those little Planck little guy, right? Well, let's try to get a relative relationship between size. We'll take the Vatican. They'll be my friends one of these days. And if we take the Vatican dome out there, it's pretty big, right? 42 meter diameter. Okay. And because we have incredible dedicated people at the Resonance Project, I actually got my director of communication to climb onto the Vatican dome. And so there's Susan. Okay, and Susan is made out of about 100 trillion cells, depending on how much she ate that day and so on. And each one of those cells is made of 100 trillion atoms, right? So like, you guys, like, integrate this, you know, just for a second, 100 trillion cells, that's a large number. But then imagine 100 trillion atoms making each one of those cells. And now you're kind of getting to the incredible complexity of what you are, right? So now you get as well a sense of how small an atom is, right? And so if you go in the middle of that atom, there's a little beady dot in the middle we call a proton. And in those 100 trillion cells of each of the 100 trillion atoms of each of your cells, there's one of those little protons, at least one if it's a hydrogen atom, for instance. And that little guy in the middle of the atom, right, is about the size of the head of a pin. Okay? So that's the little guy proton. Okay? He is so teeny weeny beady thing, right? You guys get a sense how small that is? Okay, that's really, 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 really small, right? Okay, what is the Planck relative to a proton? Well, if I took a grain of sand and made a little Planck, so I grab a little grain of sand and I make it so that the Planck is the size of a grain of sand, then what would be the size of a proton? Well, there's the grain of sand, and here's, you know, compared to the Earth, the grain of sand is really small. The Earth compared to the Sun is really small. But if I made a Planck a little grain of sand, then the proton would have a diameter of 4 trillion kilometers, okay, which is approximately the distance between our sun and Alpha Centauri. Okay, that's how small the little pixel is, right? So you're not getting a sense of it just hanging out, right? I mean, you're just not. Because people say it, but how can the vacuum be full of energy? And I wouldn't know it. But think about it this way. You're in a room full of electromagnetic fields right now that actually, you know, have wavelengths much larger than the Planck. And you don't necessarily feel it. You know, there's ultraviolet, there's infrared, there's radio waves, there's all this stuff. And you don't necessarily know it's there. So there's no way you're experiencing the Planck unless, you know, you're, you know, part of this group of psychic, or, you know, you are taking some very advanced, you know, chemical concoctions, you know. But this little Planck is everywhere in the space. And in fact, maybe the cause of what you call the material world, when the Planck's play together, right? So we, from there, can calculate how much Planck there is in a centimeter cube of space, right? You all following this? So you stack a centimeter cube of space with the little Planck's, and since they're all little vibration, they all have a little mass, right? Because E equals mc squared, energy equals mass, right? So you can calculate the mass. And the amount of mass of these little Planck in the centimeter cube of space is 10 to the 93 grams per centimeter cube, 10 with 93 zeros. That's a large number, right? Extremely large. You all notice when in your bank account, when you add a zero, you know, things improve rapidly. You know, you got like 4 zeros, it's okay. You put another one, it's like, oh, that's nice. You put another one, it's like, oh, now we're getting somewhere. You put another one, it's like, oh, yeah. Now we're like, you know. Now imagine you're like at 50 zeros and you're still adding, right? So 94 or 93 zeros. That's a big number. How big? If I took all the stars in the universe, all the galaxy, everything we see in the observable universe, and I squished it all into a centimeter cube of space, I would have a density of 10 to the 55 grams per centimeter cube. I'd still have to add another 39 zeros to get to the density of the Planck vacuum at the quantum level. Right? It's seriously dance, right? Now we're talking about density, right? So the vacuum is seriously dense in energy. And that's why it's confusing to people, because it's like, it sounds counterintuitive. You're talking about the vacuum, but you're talking about something that's like almost infinitely dense. So it's like, ah, but I have to use the word vacuum, because if I don't use the word vacuum, then other physicists won't know what I'm talking about. It should be called the ether, or it should be called, you know, the plenum. It had many, many names. Many ancient civilizations talked about it. The chi, the mana, the stuff that the juice that everything works with, right? That stuff has been well known and well documented for thousands of years. And it actually came out in our equations in physics almost 100 years ago. And it just went unnoticed. And this is why physics students don't get taught this so often, because it's such a huge number that in general, physicists try to avoid it. It's kind of embarrassing, because they know they're going to have some of those bright students in the classroom going, dude, why are we pulling oil out of the ground? You know, like, right? Like, why do we think that it's not enough for everybody? Why do we think that we have to fight for resources? You know, I don't know who was at the panel that we just did, which was awesome. That was the best panel ever, I thought. Like, amazing people, amazing. And this energy is present everywhere. And we, in the panel, we were talking about wars and you know, how to, like, get into a peaceful state with each other. Well, there's a lot of important evolutionary things that have to happen in our consciousness for that to happen. But one of the most important thing that come from the transformation of our awareness is that when we apply that higher level of awareness to technology, we eliminate the stressors that drives war.
Okay, I'm going to stop right there. It's that bewitching hour. We're going to try to finish this tomorrow. Next week. Very exciting. Perfect for tonight. Okay, I'm going to do something just a little bit different. I got such beautiful little email blessings for my birthday to my holy divine sister of light, another sister with her daughter created this beautiful fairy garden in their backyard, and they sent me a picture of it, and oh my. And then I got this card, and it's called I Believe. And it says, I believe in mind over matter. I believe in the human spirit. I believe in the human spirit to prevail. I believe in miracles and blessings, both great and small. I believe that hurdles in life are means to be jumped over, are meant to be jumped over, not as something to stop us. And then I believe in possibilities. Great series, I Believe series by Brian Burns and George Harris. Recycled paper. Okay, everybody. The gratitude we all have here for the smallest little things of beauty in our lives is just so valuable. May peace prevail in all of our lives, and may the unicorn be with us May we all get to experience these beings who have always been here. May we do that. What a great time we have. What a time to be alive. This is worth every lifetime we've ever been in. May peace prevail on earth, and we'll see you in the light and in our dreams. Together we are all another ourselves, and we'll see you tomorrow. Namaste, everybody, and music, maestro.